Welcome back to the Environmental Law Monitor. I'm your host today, Taylor Stewart. This podcast is brought to you by Bracewell LLP's Environment, Lands, and Resources Practice Group. It's a place for thoughtful conversations where we cover the latest developments in addition to perennial topics like litigation, enforcement, and compliance assurance. We're glad you're spending some time with us today. So today we thought that in honor of Women's History Month, we would spend some time reflecting on and celebrating the contributions of women to the environmental legal profession. We wanted to cover practical advice for women attorneys. As a woman attorney that's still pretty early in my career, I often get great advice from my colleagues and great advice from webinars and podcasts that I listen to. And I thought that I would bring together some of our really talented practitioners in our Environment, Lands, and Resources group here at Bracewell, in addition to our colleague who is now outside counsel at a company, to just talk through what their careers have been like over the years and advice that they have for other women attorneys, whether they be junior attorneys that are still early in their careers or more senior in their careers that could still benefit from the advice of experienced practitioners. So from there, I'll introduce our guests here today. First, we have Brittany Pemberton. She's a partner in our Environment, Lands, and Resources group at Bracewell. She advises energy, oil and gas, and industrial clients in environmental compliance and enforcement matters and in developing and challenging EPA regulations, particularly under the Clean Air Act. Brittany has a bachelor's and master's in music and has been with Bracewell since she graduated from George Washington University Law School in 2013. So Brittany, thanks for being here and thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Taylor.
Next, we have Sarah Bergen. She's an attorney in our Environment, Lands, and Resources group here at Bracewell. Sarah has more than 40 years of legal experience assisting clients with issues relating to water use and wastewater permitting. In the last few years, she's assisted clients with permitting issues that are associated with carbon sequestration, including use of Class 2 permits in Texas for sequestration of carbon and oil and gas operations, which has been really interesting to see. Sarah is considered to be one of the top water quality lawyers in Texas, and she's also a fellow in the American College of Environmental Lawyers. She has a master's in botany, where she specialized in algae and aquatic ecology, and she earned her JD from U of H, and she joined the firm in 2015. Sarah, thank you so much for joining us.
Happy to be here.
Next, we have Christine Wyman joining us. She's senior counsel at Chevron, providing legal support for the company's climate, environmental, and energy transition policies. Prior to joining Chevron, Christine worked here at Bracewell with us, where she represented energy clients on federal energy, environmental, and climate policy matters. She also worked for a national trade association working on behalf of the natural gas industry. She has a JD from Georgetown University Law Center and a master's and bachelor's in environmental science. So Christine, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Taylor.
Of course. So first, I wanted to ask all of you, I look up to all three of you and I'm really inspired by how your careers have progressed over the years, and getting to work with you is really such a privilege for me. So I wanted to take some time to ask you for advice that you maybe wish you'd had when you began practicing. Now you're all, you know, highly experienced, but I imagine there was a time in your careers where you maybe weren't the experienced practitioners that you are now, or you didn't feel that way. Could you each tell us briefly just how your career began and maybe some advice that you wish you'd had when you're at the early stages of your career?
So I think you guys all know this about me, but maybe most of our listeners don't. I definitely took the scenic road to my legal career. And you mentioned that I've got a couple of degrees in music, but I really spent my 20s after getting those degrees focusing on trying to make a career in classical music. I had moved to the DC area and I was working in real estate to pay the bills, but teaching music lessons and performing locally and auditioning for different professional orchestras and bands and trying to get a job. But I eventually realized that I needed a new challenge because I'd spent several years on that pathway and it just wasn't panning out the way I wanted it to. Gotten interested in working in environmental policy, just sort of from being here in DC and kind of growing up as the child of a hippie and a tree hugger, I guess. But I thought with a couple of music degrees that I really lacked any real foundational skills or knowledge that I could put to use in that area. So I decided to go to law school to really bridge the gap. And it's been a terrific choice for me. I don't think I really set out when I went to law school to work at a large law firm, but the opportunities that you get at a place like Bracewell and other big law firms are just really unmatched when it comes to that substantive experience hitting the ground running. So for me, this has been just a terrific place to start my career. When I was first starting out, though, something that I wish that I had known, I wish somebody had told me just to be authentic. There's a lot of pressure to perform at a high level in the legal profession. And of course, law firms are not immune to that. I still feel it now, even as a partner, but I really felt it when I was first starting out because I knew that I had a lot to learn and I wanted to prove myself. I wanted to be useful. I wanted to progress. But I wish that I'd realized that I could be myself a little bit more. In the conversations that I was having with more senior lawyers and with clients, I think if somebody had helped me see that partners and clients are people too, I probably would have relaxed at least just a little bit and maybe found my footing a little bit faster.
That's really good advice, Brittany. I struggle all the time with trying to be my genuine self and wondering how much do you share in work meetings? And the point you made about clients are people too, and your bosses are people too. And the way that you connect with them is by sharing more things about yourself and being yourself in the workplace, which is, I think, really difficult for a lot of attorneys to do. So I think that's great advice. Christine and Sarah.
I had gone to graduate school in a science. I had worked for a couple of years as a researcher in science. And so I had spent a lot of time before I went to law school working as the only woman around men. And so I knew when I started out looking for jobs that one of the things I wanted to look for was a group, because this was early on and there were not very many women at all in big law firms, that I wanted to look for a group who would be supportive of women. I was extremely lucky in that I found a group that was exactly what I needed. And right after I started, the senior partner asked me if I wanted to tag along with him to the TCEQ. And I said, sure. And so I'm walking with him, sort of following him through the main room as we were heading towards the person he was going to meet with. And it was full of the administrative staff and who are mainly women. And as we walked past those people, he knew the names of each one of them and knew something about each one of them. And they all knew him and were happy to see him. And he interacted with them like they were important people. And that hooked me completely in the fact that that was the person I wanted to work for, because he was a genuinely good person, as well as being an extremely good environmental lawyer. And so that's the group that I worked with for 21 years. And I was usually the only female in the group, and they treated me like one of the guys. And I made partner there, and it was a great experience. And I developed my own niche, which I think is important. We can talk about that later. And I was able to be myself there. That is really important. I learned to speak my mind there and to not let other people speak for me. And those were all things that I needed to learn as a person.
That's all really great to hear. And I think that's a great anecdote to say that the people that you're working with respect women, that they don't see them as administrative staff or holding some different place as compared to a man. I imagine that particularly at that time in your career and at just that time in society that you found that to be a really important thing. And I think it's unfortunately still something that we have to look out for today and that women look for in their workplaces. You want someone that's going to be inclusive of women and, you know, treat you in the same way that they would treat your male colleagues. So it's wonderful that you were able to find that so early in your career. Christine, are there things that brings up for you or thoughts that you have?
I graduated from undergrad with a degree in environmental science and thought that I was going to be an engineer maybe one day if I ever went back to school, but that was kind of doubtful for me. And I moved up to DC and ended up working actually at Bracewell in an administrative capacity. I worked with some amazing people who are still at Bracewell, and they were incredibly genuine and authentic and really saw value in my environmental science degree, even though I didn't know how to really answer the phone or do any of the administrative tasks they needed me to do. At least I somewhat understood the topics they were working on. And I think that's what drew them to me. But when I was thinking about my next steps, I was very focused on grad school because that's just kind of what I knew. I didn't really know a lot of lawyers other than the lawyers I was working with, nobody in my family. But they really pushed me to look outside the box from grad school and look at law school. And I took that advice. I still went to grad school for environmental policy, but then I ended up going to law school as well. And then even when I graduated from law school, I graduated at a time when summer associate jobs were few and far between. The year before me, classes got decimated and nobody was getting offers. And so when I was looking for that summer associate position, it was pretty stressful to be, you know, at a big law school with a lot of debt and thinking about where I might find a home. And so when I was interviewing, I remember just trying to sell myself as like a generalist, even though I had environmental undergrad degree and a master's degree. I was like, I like contracts and transactions and property law. Didn't want to pigeonhole myself into one thing. But I ended up at a firm that really did see the value that I brought from the environmental perspective, and they brought me into the environmental section. And I think it was at a time when people were still doing general assignment. It was a little unusual to go directly into a section there. So I had a great experience there and really valued the relationships that I made with people at that firm. And so when I think, though, what Brittany said about being authentic, I think that's something that did not come natural for me either. Working at a big firm and being a lawyer is kind of intimidating sometimes. And so you have this persona that you think that you're supposed to put on, but it's really, you know, we all are human. And one of the things that kind of is like a corollary to that is like not to be afraid to say that you don't know something. Often that just seems so daunting to like say like, I don't understand this, or like, I don't know the answer. But sometimes that can be what clients need to hear, or what your supervisors, or what your colleagues need to hear too. And it also, I think sometimes like shows that you're willing to say that, like you're that they can trust you to like identify like where the bounds of what you are, and that you can go find more information. I will say that you probably know more than you think, which is something also that I've learned over time. But knowing like when to say like, I need more information, or could you explain that a different way? Like it's hard to do, especially when you're junior, but I wish that I had done that more.
It is a really hard thing to do. And I still find myself wanting to just push through and I'll figure it out. But there's a moment to call it and to say, yeah, I'm not sure, I don't know. And saying it earlier rather than later is probably definitely the best thing to do, rather than kind of saying it too late.
And I think the struggle is real. I think especially in the legal profession, where people are looking to you because you're supposed to be an expert in something, you're supposed to have the answer. And so it is really tempting, especially at a young age or when you're new in your career, to just say, I didn't totally understand that, but that's okay. I'm going to run on my hamster wheel behind the scenes and I'm going to figure it out. I can answer this question. I can get all the background and the context myself without bothering somebody. But going back to my thought about being your authentic self, like you just have to get comfortable in your skin and to be able to say, or at least to have the judgment to say that there are some times when you can run on your hamster wheel and like figure it out. And then there are some times when it's either not worth it or it's really not necessary. And that probably there was a lot of stuff that I spent time trying to teach myself when I was starting out that somebody would have gladly talked me through or taught me if I'd really just talked to them about it. But the struggle is still real, even as a partner, because you may have the phone ring with a potential client calling you and saying, have you ever answered a question in this kind of related area? And you could sort of be like, I know how to do this and kind of fudge your way through it. But I just find, because I'm trying to be authentic and because I don't want people to get the wrong impression about me, I would much rather tell them that I have related experience. I haven't done exactly what you're asking me to do, but let me just own up to that because I can still show that I have real useful experience. And if honesty means that I don't ultimately get that project from the client, then that's okay, because that's another opportunity for me. I can make a note of the issue for myself and use some of my business development time to learn about it on my own. So the next time that question comes up, I have something a little more substantive to say about it.
I think actually that that's sort of a female response to it, or at least it is mine as well. I know of people who would just kind of blast through and kind of make it up as they go and are generally right. But I tend to always want to do the same thing that you did, to say, I need to do a little bit of research on it. I'm happy to do that. It's really interesting, but I always want to research it before I talk.
And I think the further along you get in your career, you can say, I haven't answered that exact question. My gut tells me it might be this, but I really should research it for you. And people need to take that at face value because you've got some experience and that's worth something.
Yeah. I always think that the more I can tell a person who's going to help me on something, the context of it, as opposed to just giving somebody, here's a question that I want you to go research. If I can give them the context, number one, I think they're more efficient in figuring it out, and more, and also it's just more interesting. And we all want to understand sort of how whatever it is we're researching fits into the bigger picture. I don't know. That's one of the things that I have always enjoyed, knowing the context of what I'm researching.
Yeah, I think that is always helpful for me. I mean, having the context and kind of knowing what you're looking for is always helpful. And being able to just walk into someone's office to say, I actually don't know that much about this. Can you tell me more about it? Can you explain more? Or maybe being honest with the client and saying, actually, I haven't addressed this before, but it's something that I could look into for you. I imagine that more often than not, the client or the partner are saying, yeah, it would be fine for you to look into that for me. They're not necessarily looking for someone that knows every single answer. And I think that's something that all junior associates should keep in mind. But I think women associates, particularly, who find themselves sometimes wondering, am I an imposter? Are they going to find me out that I actually have no idea what's going on? It is entirely appropriate to admit that you don't have any idea what's going on. And in fact, that opens the door for someone to teach you something or to ask you to, you know, take on that project and go out and find the answer for them because you've been honest about your experience level and they know what that endeavor will look like going forward. So I think those are all really, really good points and definitely something that I have to remind myself of every day that it's okay to admit that you don't know what's going on. And in fact, they would be shocked if you said that you know everything that they're talking about. With something that Christine said earlier about being a generalist, I think young lawyers often, we all say things in interviews or in some of these first meetings, like, I'm really interested in transactional work. And we have no idea what that means. We're just using words that our law school kind of told us to say out loud, but you don't know what that means. And I always find it much more genuine and believable when a law student or probably me or other associates say things like, you know, actually, I don't know what it means to do this kind of work, or I don't know what those terms mean. Could you explain that to me? I think I'm interested in work that looks something like X, Y, and Z. Rather than, you know, trying to market yourself as knowing something that you really don't, because you lose a little bit of trust there with the person that you're talking to when you're not being your authentic self, which is something we've talked about as being really important. But then you're also kind of marketing yourself as something with the experience that you maybe don't have. And as Sarah pointed out, that's probably something that men do all the time and they probably get away with it and maybe benefit from it. But I think we are kind of thinking about the benefits of it in a different way.
I think there's like one more benefit though, too. I mean, often when you have a fresh set of eyes on something, you bring a new perspective to an issue. And so I think there's a value too that you could deliver to clients. As women, we should also like look to how our perspective is like benefiting. We're saying like asking questions is like a negative, but it can actually really be a benefit to making sure that we're fully understanding what the situation is and what the context is, and that you can really provide that nuanced advice.
Yeah, that's such a good point that there it really is. Thinking about differences between men and women, I think young female lawyers often get marketed a lot of information about how hard it is to be a woman lawyer, which is so true. But I think that there are, you know, so many, you know, lessons to be learned from practitioners like all of you to show that it's actually really great being a woman lawyer. And there are differences to keep in mind. But overall, I think we, you know, have such great value to bring to the table. So I always try to focus on that. But in terms of the differences, are there areas where you have seen improvement in terms of the ability of women to succeed as lawyers, particularly in a big law firm? Are there places that you still see that a lot of improvement is needed? Do you guys have thoughts on that?
There are more women now than there used to be, so that's better.
Big plus.
Yeah. You have more role models. You have other people to talk to in this kind of situation. You just have a lot of advantages in that context. There are a lot more women in-house, which is good for us. And that's something that we should remember. And it should hopefully work for us in terms of client development and things like that. Because it's always good to be able to go to a nice lunch and have a kind of a girl's lunch. But at the same time, there's still a lot of the same things that existed when I first started practicing. So we do have a ways to go.
I think one of the challenges is sort of pipeline related. Like, it's great now that there are so many women going to law school and graduating from law school. And there were even 10 years ago, 12 years ago when I went. But it's so hard to see how you retain those people throughout their sort of formative years so that then you have women who are as seasoned as Sarah and women who are in leadership roles around the legal department of a client or around the law firm. And I don't know what the answer is to all of that, except that I've got this sense that the profession is so demanding as it is that it's hard to really figure out how to do all that's expected of you in a professional sense, and then also to have somewhat of a personal life. And the only advice that I can give on that is to just keep on keeping on. Like, I think it does get better. I think you get some experience under your belt, you grow some expertise, you become known as sort of a resource in whatever legal capacity that you're working in. And then people start to, I think, cut you a little more slack or give you the grace really to get the things done that you need to get done around the house or with your family or things like that. And then I hope that attitudes are just sort of getting better in that direction, that there is more sort of support and more of a willingness to consider that people have full complex lives outside of work, and that without kind of recognizing that, we're, I think, going to continue to struggle. You're going to hit some point in your career where you see women who really exit the legal profession, or they have to step back for several years and kind of dial back the intensity that they would otherwise put to it while they're trying to have a family. And that's part of the challenge and part of the reason maybe, Sarah, why things have gotten better and changed in some ways, but not really all the ways you'd wish.
Yeah, it's interesting that you used the word grace, because grace is a word that I thought of earlier today, too. In a way, I was lucky, I'll use that word, that about the time I started to have my children, I was becoming directly involved with clients. And so that I was working directly with clients in terms of what I was able to promise to them. And I actually had some more control over when I promised something, as opposed to dealing with internal deadlines that I didn't really have any control over. Somebody else had already promised it before I knew about it. And that made an enormous difference in my ability to maintain sanity. And also just the fact that I had a particular sort of niche. And actually, with the folks I was working with were understanding and had the grace to basically let me be a partner, but I also did not work the same hours that they worked, because I did want to go to my kids' soccer games and want to be able to go up to their school occasionally and those kinds of things. And although it is crazy, and you kind of look at yourself and you go, okay, I'll be able to sleep in about 18 years or so when at some point. But it's a relatively short time in the span of your life. It's all worth it completely, I think, at least it was to me. But having the folks around you in your professional life that sort of recognize that and are willing to kind of work with you is enormously important. Because I have a lot of friends who dropped out, women friends who dropped out of the practice of law just because they didn't have any flexibility and they couldn't do it and they just burned out.
Building on what Sarah said about grace, I think the counterpart to that is being able to accept that grace too. And sometimes that is hard, right? Like, because we want to do all the things, and that includes all the things at work and all the things at home. And there's a lot to unpack in that. And sometimes it's really hard to accept that grace. Somebody told me once when it was like a women's luncheon mentorship type situation at the first law firm that I worked at. And she was more senior in her career, and I think she was the head of a trade association. And she said, what you need out of your job can evolve over time, right? And so like what a job that works for you at this point in your life might not work for you at a different point of your life. And that is okay. And so whether it's figuring out what that grace balance is when you're, you know, like what Sarah said, she stayed at the firm, but she was able to like figure out how it worked for her in different ways, or figuring out different career paths that work for different times of your life. I think that's another solution too, obviously. I've been at two law firms, and I've been at a trade association, and now in-house. But it's a little bit of identifying what those priorities are for you and how you want to balance that, and how you accept that grace in different situations.
Yeah, that's a really great point about just the different stages of your life and what you need from your job at different periods of time. And I know for each of you has been elected partner at some point in your career. And I imagine your needs at that time are different maybe than they are now, or maybe they're the same. But I think it's, you know, amazing that all three of you have reached that point. You know, what do you see as the skills that really got you there? If you were talking to, I'm not quite at this level, but talking to an eighth year associate that really wants to make partner, like, what do you think are the differentiating factors that push you to that level as a woman in this profession?
I think you reach a certain point in your career and people expect that the legal advice that you are given is solid, right? I mean, that you've got the expertise and the subject matter and that you can do that. And so what I think can really set you apart is the communication skills, right? Like how you deliver that advice and like knowing your audience, whether or not the long memo is needed, whether or not the short bullet points are needed, whether or not it's an email, and how you're really making sure that the critical points of what that you are trying to convey to your client, that they can actually digest it and then use it. And I saw that, I think, a lot in the law firm. I worked with a lot of really talented professionals who really could just read the clients and understand like how the delivery of our advice would be most beneficial. And I thought that was a really great skill, because a lot of times when you are at the firm, you don't have the complete picture as to like how your client is going to be using that advice, like what it looks like on the other side. Like you give it to your point of contact, but what they're going to do with it, how they're going to socialize it, and how they're going to leverage it internally is not always known. And so being able to kind of like foresee how that's going to play out, I think is really critical. And I've seen that also play out here now that I'm in-house, understanding who my internal clients are and how I can be most useful to them in delivering the advice, I think has been helpful.
I think it probably is maybe different now than when I first was up for partner. Hours count. One thing that's going to be important for anybody up for partner is how busy you are and how much client responsibility you have learned to accept. I think Christine's point about knowing your client, who you're writing for, is one of those things that's really important in terms of being able to be responsive to the clients in the timeline that they need, and having the maturity to be able to do that, and have the firm have confidence that you've got maturity to do that. I think that's important.
I mean, I think having a niche is definitely part of it. When we're talking about environmental law, a lot of the conversation we've been having here, I think, would translate to other practice areas and areas of the law. But when it comes to environmental law, it's like you've got your big pollution control statutes, and then you've got some natural resources stuff sort of on the other side. And I think most young lawyers are really well served by sort of picking an area or two to really focus on in terms of just being able to be the go-to resource within your own, you know, practice group or within your own legal department or whatever it is, just being known for being the person that does X, Y, and Z. And like Sarah said, sometimes it's luck that we don't necessarily all set out in life to have our niche be in a particular area. One of my niches is really fuels regulation and fuel and air quality issues from fuels and renewable fuels. And I never in a million years would have known that that's where I was headed in life. But I had an opportunity sort of presented to me because the firm had a client who had a need. And I have been able to kind of start, you know, small and learning in one area of that. And it's really blossomed into something that I was, when I was up for partner, was able to say, this is a thing that I do that nobody else here does. I'm the one in the firm who knows the most about it.
Yeah, those are all really great points. And Christine, I'm curious how you maybe feel about the niche now, because I know when you were at the firm, I mean, you had were practicing a wide variety of different things for our clients, but I know you were, you know, at one time really focused on hydrogen. Have you found now that you've gone in-house that you've had to kind of widen that back out? Or do you feel like you're still able to kind of follow or still need to really follow that niche? Or do you have to kind of go back to the stage where you become a generalist again?
It's a great question. Some days I feel like it's the niche and some days I feel like it's the generalist. And maybe that's just a little bit of being in-house that I'm still trying to figure out. So I think a lot of what I do now is having a niche within like broader topic areas. I think that might be a good way of looking at it. So like, I think having skill sets that can be applied across different client groups, particularly since I'm supporting a company that is so broad in what they do. I think my niche is a little bit broader than it used to be, but I'm still seen as like having that niche. And that has been useful for me in establishing what I do here, how I can be useful, and the value that I can provide. The niche might change a little bit, but it's still, there's value there. And it goes back to like being able to say like things that you don't know and asking questions. I have definitely had to do that as I'm figuring out like what my role is and what is, you know, how I can be of service, understanding like where I need to ask more questions and learning new topics. And it's been an interesting journey.
One of the things I love about environmental resources law is that as we've kind of each described developing an expertise, environmental law continues to evolve since before I started practicing and then through my years of practice. New things keep developing all the time, and that enables us to develop niches and when new things come along. Nobody else knows it. And so if you end up being the one to take it on, then you are the expert. And I think in a lot of other areas of law, I mean, can you imagine wills and estates? I mean, I don't think it really advances like that. We're all, in a way, we're kind of geeks from the standpoint that we keep learning and keep developing our expertise, which is what I love about it. But it also enables us to have that opportunity.
Sarah, it's funny that you say that because I have been doing a lot on ESG disclosures. And it's not new at this point, but it is in the evolution of like environmental law. It is one of the newer type themes. And I will say that the practitioners, both on the law side and also on like the financial and the business side, are primarily women. And so I don't know if there's something that like draws us to these new issues in environmental law, but it is not unusual for me to be on calls with all women, which is fun. And I will say they are very productive calls. There's always agendas and we get things done and there are follow-ups and it's great teaming.
Yeah, that's really wonderful to see. And I often find myself and probably take for granted how often I am on calls with all women or on the environmental specialist on a deal team that's all women. I imagine that that is still kind of a rare thing. And I think sometimes I do take it for granted a bit, but it is a really wonderful thing. We have really amazing women who work at the firm that, including all of you, that I get to learn from, and being able to be on a really, really productive team where maybe there's no one getting in your way is always really wonderful. I really want to thank all of you for joining us. Are there any last thoughts?
I would just say, since somebody mentioned imposter syndrome, just don't buy into it. You belong.
Great piece of advice. The probably most important one that we could get, because I think that all of us feel that way still, I think, on a daily basis. And it's a constant fight to make yourself believe that you're not an imposter, you're not posing. You know what you're doing and you have to trust yourself and let other people trust you. And yeah, I think that that's a great note for us to end on, Brittany. So thank you for adding that in. Well, thank you everyone for joining us on today's episode of the Environmental Law Monitor, and happy Women's History Month. We will see you soon.